Children study the world around them very closely. They notice differences, different hair, different clothes, different skin colors. And they use that information to try to make sense of our puzzling world. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore how children learn about race. I'll talk with Aaron Winkler, an associate professor of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Madeline Rogan, a kindergarten teacher who writes about race and education. Later in the hour, I'll talk with librarian and children's author Vonda Michaud Nelson about the overwhelmingly white world of children's literature. And we want to hear your stories. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to explore how children learn about race and what we can do to help them understand race and overcome prejudice. Later this hour, I'll talk with children's author Vonda Michaud Nelson about the not very diverse world of children's literature. With me now is Madeline Rogan, is a kindergarten teacher at Prospect Sierra School in El Cerrito, California. She writes about race and education for Good Magazine online at www.good.is. Hello, Madeline.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, thank you so much for being here today. We will get Erin on the line in just a few minutes, and she and I are going to talk about how children begin to observe race and try to make sense out of the patterns in the world around them. You are a kindergarten teacher. What are some of the questions that kindergartners come to you with about race?
Well, I found that once you open up the conversation about our differences, and our similarities, specifically around skin color and race, children just have so much curiosity and are just so full of questions. I've had kids ask me, some of the most common ones are, you know, where does our skin color come from? Do you get your skin color just from your mom? What about if you're adopted? You know, just sort of the really, it just really makes you realize how, what an awesome opportunity it is to build their understanding and give them information once you start. And yeah, I found it's a really exciting conversation to have with young children.
Do you feel like those questions have been bubbling underneath the surface, but they haven't had an opportunity to ask them?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, being a white kindergarten teacher in a predominantly, white environment, although we do have, you know, kids of color in the classroom, I would say the majority of the students I teach, especially, we don't have a lot of African-American students. And when I first started teaching kindergarten, I myself wasn't sure how to start talking about race and, you know, I was actually worried that it would create divisions in the classroom once we start talking about differences, that we should really be focusing on how we're the same. And so I did that for a long time. And then I realized really once I started wanting to teach kids about the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King, that's when I began to realize that without a basic understanding and appreciation of our differences and how to be inclusive around those differences around skin color, the students really couldn't understand who Martin Luther King was and, you know, the importance of his work. And so I kind of reframed what I thought was an inclusive conversation. I started to teach around skin color and started those conversations with the kids in September. And then I realized that the students were just so eager to explore it. And it's such a rich conversation to have, and there's so many things you can do, not just talking. There's so many great books you can read about skin color, great children's authors that write about, you know, how all the different shades that we come in. And then there's so many great poetry and art activities you can do about our skin colors. So it's added to the class, and it's allowed me to create a more inclusive community than I thought I ever could, actually.
Well, we'll talk about some of those activities specifically in a few minutes because they are fascinating. I want to now bring Aaron Winkler into the conversation. She is an associate professor of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, How are you?
I'm good. Erin, from your research, when do children start to notice skin colors?
Well, it will probably surprise many listeners that research shows that by the age of 6 months, infants are already able to categorize people consistently by race. And people say, well, how do we know this? They can't even talk. But what researchers show is that consistently by 6 months, so they think it begins to happen even earlier, that children gaze longer at the face of an unfamiliar, different race adult than they do at an unfamiliar same race adult. Now, these studies have only been done with children who have two parents of the same race, so this might be complicated if those kids are used to looking at parents of different races. But these studies consistently show this, and so scholars use this to show that even by infancy that children are able to categorize by race.
As children get a little bit older, do we know when they start to form ideas about race?
Yes, there's actually a great deal of research on this. So we know that by the age of two, two-year-olds can use racial categories to reason about people's behaviors. So when asked, why is that person doing that? We consistently will find children at 2 years old using skin color as one of the reasons to reason why someone may be behaving the way they're behaving. And that's what psychologists would call stereotyping. So categorizing, noticing someone is in a category or being able to say that they're in a category isn't negative in and of itself. We call that stereotyping when you add assumptions about what the person is like or what they're good at or not good at or how they behave based on what category you've placed them in. So the problem is not that you notice that I'm a woman, but that you think because I'm a woman, I'm too emotional to be president of the United States, right? That's the stereotyping.
But children are doing this stereotyping all the time. They're trying to make sense of the world through this action, right?
Exactly. And by 3 to 5 year olds, we actually see children expressing bias or what psychologists would call prejudice. And that's taking stereotyping but adding what we call in-group bias. Not only are there assumptions about group, but my group is better than your group. And so it's true, children are trying to make sense of the world. The world is a cognitive puzzle for them. They see different patterns, and they're trying to figure them out, so it makes sense that they're doing it.
And they're making patterns out of things that are not racial biases as well. I mean, I can very easily imagine my son saying, you know, everyone in our family is tall, that means we're better than this other family that is not as tall. I mean, they pick up on these patterns all the time.
Exactly. And so the problem is that there's a lot of racial patterns in our society. And so the problem comes when adults think we shouldn't talk about this with kids because we will put negative ideas in their head. Because the world is their cognitive puzzle, and they're trying to figure out why, you know, these people with this color seem to be in my neighborhood or in my home or in this neighborhood or doing this on TV, right? If we are silent about it, then kids will reason on their own. And what research often shows is that they will infer that since they see these patterns and adults aren't saying anything about it to them, that there must be good and inherent reasons for these differences.
They're also watching us very closely, their parents, their teachers, other people in their lives.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And so there may be things that we're doing that give them an idea of a racial bias as well, right?
Right. So adults tend to think that color blindness is best. So ignoring race or not talking about race, if we don't talk about it, then they won't get any ideas about that. And in fact, the opposite is true. And so if they see their parents having people of the same race only over to the house or implicitly endorsing particular kinds of behaviors or particular groups of people or behaviors that seem to be racialized or television shows or movies or any of these things, they will definitely draw a meaning from it. And so this cannot be a do as I say, not as I do type of message. Even if we're telling our kids, it's good to have friends of other races, but then we don't model that for our children, they won't take it as a very important message. If mom's not doing it, it can't be that important.
Madeline, how important do you feel it is to give our children language to talk about race?
I think that's probably one of the most important things we can do as educators and parents. And I just want to say I'm so happy that we're having this conversation today. I've spent a lot of time over the past couple years thinking about these issues as a parent and an educator, and it makes me really happy to know that these kinds of conversations are happening. And I really appreciate the research-based, what proves the things that I see in the classroom every day. I think the students, once we start talking about these issues and they're allowed to ask their questions, you can see their learning, and it reminds me of how, you know, as teachers, we approach teaching reading or math. We want to build a foundation for our students so that they can, you know, understand sort of complicated ideas. So that's sort of what I've been thinking about a lot in kindergarten. But whenever I talk about race or skin color, I'm always giving my students language to use to be inclusive with one another and also to help them understand and appreciate difference. So, for example, one thing that happened a lot in my class, because the African-American students are in the minority in my classroom, and I would watch my white students kind of be fascinated with the hair, especially of African-American girls, and some of my white students wanted to touch their hair and talk about their hair, and I took it as an opportunity to not only talk about what all five-year-olds need to know about personal space and keeping their hands to themselves, but also to read books about different hairstyles and different hair types and what that means and how we can actually appreciate that difference. And so instead of saying, oh, that's not good, and just stop, and we're not going to talk about your curiosity about that, opening it up and really exploring those questions that kids have and giving them language so that they have a deeper understanding and appreciation of each other.
I want to explore this more and talk about some of the specific language that you use in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to this conversation very soon. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100 with your questions or your stories. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm talking right now with Madeline Rogan. She's a kindergarten teacher. She also writes about race and education for Good Magazine online at www.good.is. And also with me, Erin Winkler, an associate professor of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and author of Learning Race, Learning Place, Shaping Racial Identities and Ideas in African-American Childhoods. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how children learn about race and how we can teach children about race. With me is Erin Winkler. She's an associate professor of Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Madeline Rogan, a kindergarten teacher, and she also writes about race and education online at www.good.is. And Madeline, just before the break, we were talking about giving children specific language to be able to talk about race. And as a parent, that's something that I've struggled with because I obviously want my children to understand that the color of somebody's skin doesn't matter. But a lot of the language of race doesn't really make sense to kids. When you talk about African Americans, that's a difficult concept for a small child to understand. If you use the term black, then they say, well, skin isn't black. I've never seen anybody with black skin. I've only seen people with brown skin. So, right. And I'm sure as a kindergarten teacher, you've run into this as well. How do you give kids the language to talk about race?
That's such a great question. And I've, you know, in my own sort of questions as a teacher and a parent about how to start talking about race, I looked for really good books. So I've found there are so many great picture books especially for young children. Books like The Skin You Live In by Michael Tyler or The Colors of Us by Karen Katz, All the Colors of the Earth by Sheila Hamanaka. These are all great books that just explore shades of people. And you're right, kids don't really understand the terms black and white, although those are important concepts for children to understand as you start talking about racism especially. And again, the foundation is the most important part, I think, as a teacher. So before you start giving kids labels that, you know, are often used to put other people down, before you start having those more complicated conversations, you really want to start with the positive, the celebrating diversity, and not using sort of concepts that they can't understand yet. So really starting with books that talk about brown. There's a great poetry book called Tan to Tamarind. It's written by Malasi Michelle Iyengar. And it's all poems about the color brown. And I really love this book because when I was searching for poetry that would talk about skin colors, it was actually really hard to find. And this book is all about poems about the color brown. And you can do activities based on the book that give kids even more of an appreciation of diversity. For example, in my class, we get together all these different spices that are brown, chai, cocoa, cinnamon, coffee, and the kids smell it, and if it's appropriate, they taste it, and then they make artwork out of it, and they write poems about brown. And it was really amazing for me to see how their appreciation of the color brown grew, and it made me realize how often, you know, kids might say something negative about brown because they haven't been given positive associations about it, not even related to skin color, just the color in general. And from there, having kids doing fun activities like getting paint, different shades of paint, and having kids mix paint to find their own shade, and getting paint chips from like Home Depot or paint store and comparing their skin to the paint chips. And those often have really kind of creative names. I think mine was Desert something. And there's like all these different names that, you know, that when you paint your room, the names that come from the paint chips, and the kids can write poems about their skin using those kind of creative names. And the idea behind that for me was really giving my white students the idea that they also have a skin color, and that in order for them to appreciate what skin color means and the diversity around them, they also need to understand that they have a race. And instead of seeing it as, oh, those kids have a race or those kids are different, we all have different shades. And I find that to be a really great way to just give kids a greater appreciation for what skin color really is, and also to work against the idea in our culture that white is not a race, that it's somehow just normal or American, especially when you're in a group that's a little more homogeneous and has less teachers of color, students of color, people of color, kind of working against that idea, because really we all have a race, and there's not one that's normal or better. It's all just appreciating who we are.
Erin, what role do you think language plays in children's understanding of race?
I think that Madeline brings up great points about language around inclusivity and difference. I think research shows us that it's also very important to bring up language to talk about inequality and social inequity and social unfairness. And the reason for this is also counterintuitive, but unfortunately, kids often don't get this kind of multicultural education that they're getting in Madeline's class. But when they do, it tends to focus on, in the contemporary moment, this kind of message on difference, which is we all have these differences, but we're all equal. We're all really the same underneath, which is a good message. But ironically, what research has found is when that's paired with the types of lessons that they tend to get in about inequality, which tend to be about the past. Right? If they get any of that, they tend to get Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and Jackie Robinson. And what we found is this can actually increase children's prejudice, because the takeaway message for them is, okay, we may look different, but we're all equal. There were problems in the past, but Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks took care of those. And so what this translates into is when kids see inequalities around them, perhaps in housing, perhaps in employment, and in perhaps in education, then the takeaway message for young children is, well, there used to be problems, but those have been taken care of. I've been taught that we're all equal now, so those people just must not work as hard. Mm. Or those people that, right, and so it's not an intended consequence of this kind of education, but we've found that it exists. And so what really also needs to happen is to talk with kids, and even young kids, preschoolers, kindergartners, about social unfairness in a way that they don't just see racism as something that individual mean people in the past did and that has nothing to do with them or that they can't do anything about. And a great way to talk about this with kids is in the language of fairness, because anyone who works with children or has young children knows that they do not like things to be unfair, right? That's not fair is a refrain I'm sure you've heard. So giving and also empowering them. Who are people in their community who are working to make unfair things more fair? What are ways that kids can get involved to make unfair things more fair? And I'll say one other thing about language, which is we actually have found that the language and the symbolism that is rife in our society about whiteness as pure and clean, Snow White, the good witch wears white, and black things as negative, evil, sin, dirty, the wicked witch wears black, right? That kids actually do translate or generalize these linguistic connotations onto people. So that's another way in which language and symbolism are important. And then I'll just make one final point, which is what Madeline said about the normalization of whiteness, or whiteness as being seen as the absence of race. It's so great that she's working to counter that in her students. That's one of the reasons, this normalization of whiteness, why even though we see in-group bias in 3 to 5-year-olds, once they get a little bit older than that, we actually start seeing all kids, well, around age 4 or 5, starting to show a pro-white bias. So initially, all the kids are showing a bias towards their own race, okay? But eventually, we start seeing a pro-white bias amongst kids of all different races. And scholars argue that this is precisely because of the way that this sort of normalization of whiteness in our culture, the way it sort of is portrayed as better to be white, seeps into the kids' consciousness.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
I'm so happy that you brought that up about also teaching kids about social inequities and also about it, you know, for me as a teacher, it's true that we start with the appreciating all of our differences and really and about art and poetry and story times. And from there, we go into this curriculum that we developed called Peaceful Changemakers, which in our intention with that is to then take the conversation to social inequities. And the most important part is empowering the kids to take action. And you're right about when we just teach about somebody like Martin Luther King, 5-year-olds will just say, well, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard kids say that a lot, and especially if, when they find out what happened, you know, and they really focus on that he was killed,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, a really hard conversation to have and also an important one to have with young kids about what happened. But so then teaching them about people who are alive and who they know and in their families. So we have kids bring in people from their own families or communities who work to make change, and we talk exactly about fair and unfair, because you're right, that is exactly what 5- and 6-year-olds can relate to and experience every day. So taking that conversation to the next level is so important, and then also taking the kids out into the community to make positive change. We go out to plant trees because we study a woman named Wangari Maathai from Kenya who planted trees and was an incredible change maker. And then they have the opportunity to do that. So it does have to go there. If we just stay with, we're in the classroom, we're talking about we're all equal, and it doesn't have any real world application, it's not going to really, you know, make the kids actually work toward equity. And that's such an important part of it. So I'm so glad that you brought that up.
When kids are making these stereotypes, when they are creating patterns around their, you know, about their world. For example, my daughter has said various things over the years. She has said, "Brown people sing well," and you know, which of course is a common cultural stereotype. But I have a hard time responding to that. She's not saying anything that's bad, you know. She's not saying something that is a negative stereotype. She does know people with brown skin who sing well. She sees people with brown skin who sing well on television and that kind of thing. Madeline, how do you suggest responding to that kind of a stereotype with something that can turn into a constructive conversation about race?
Well, for me, I always think about opening up sort of the kids' models of what they're looking at. So when we did our Peaceful Changemakers chart where we put up all these change makers that we honor. The first year I did that, I had Martin Luther King, Wangari Maathai, who's black African from Kenya, and a little girl from a children's book, I think, and they all happen to have brown skin. And one of my students said, oh, so you, in order to be a change maker, you have to be brown. And I knew why she said that, because she was looking at the chart and that's what she was seeing. But I tried to open it up. So I tried to look for people with lighter skin who were also doing important work, especially around the work of white anti-racists. That's such an important part of education for young, all kids, especially white kids, though, to identify with models that also have white skin who work toward anti-racism. So for your daughter, I would just say, you know, you mean this singer is a really good singer, whoever it is, and then give her a little bit more, give her models of examples of other people with different shades of skin color who also sing really well, and maybe she inside is a really good singer, and maybe she has a different color skin herself. So just opening it up and remembering that it is an individual person that she admires when, you know, when she's talking about somebody. So instead of saying, you know, everybody with that skin color does that, but also giving kids more examples of diversity in all areas, I think helps them in terms of their tendency to stereotype.
Erin, we live in Iowa, and in Iowa, the predominant race is Caucasian. There are minority groups that are growing, but still it makes up a very small percentage of our population. So in some communities, there is diversity. In some communities, there is no diversity. So for children who are growing up and they really only see Caucasian peers around them, how do you talk about race with kids that don't get to actually experience knowing people of different races?
So this is where the conversation about race is even more important. And the reason for this is that there's something called the documentary effect, which is essentially that the less real world meaningful contact we have with people of different races than our own, the more likely we are to think that what we see in media is real. That's why it's called the documentary effect, so that fictional accounts are real. So if we don't have a chance, the good news is that cross-racial contact decreases that. But for kids and adults who don't have a great chance for cross-racial contact or only have a chance for superficial cross-racial contact, then this kind of active anti-racist curriculum that goes beyond just cultural inclusion and looks at social problems is even more important. So the critical conversations with adults, critical curriculum. Scholars argue that it's even more important in racially homogenous school districts than it is in racially heterogeneous school districts with heterogeneity. I actually wanted to say one more thing about what Madeline was just saying about remind me what you were just saying, Madeline, I'm sorry.
About the singer?
Yes, exactly, about the positive stereotypes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Actually, there's recent research that shows that positive stereotypes can be as damaging as negative stereotypes. There's two reasons. One is what you alluded to, which is that people don't like to be stereotyped, whether it's positive or negative. People want it to be treated as individuals. But the other reason is that cognitively, research has shown that it gets us comfortable with stereotypes. And so if we say, well, it's okay to say Asians are good at math or African Americans are just great athletes or great singers or these kinds of things, then it actually increases our subconscious bias. And what researchers say is that the subconscious bias is what is most dangerous, because in order for us to fight our bias, we have to know that it's happening. And this has been shown, for example, in studies of police. In police training, this was actually done out there in the Bay Area where Madeline is. A psychologist at Stanford did this study. They used, like, video games for police training, and they found that police are quicker to pull the trigger when the fictional perpetrator in the video game has dark skin as opposed to when they have light skin. But the police themselves said, no, I don't have bias. I don't have a prejudiced bone in my body. I'm putting my life on the line for my community. And so it's an issue of separating for people. We all have subconscious bias. It doesn't make you a bad person, but you have to recognize where your subconscious biases lie in order to fight them. And so to teach children about racial bias, we have to get comfortable recognizing our own and talking about our own. We won't be able to teach them if, as adults, we're not comfortable with the conversation. And I think as a nation, we're not necessarily comfortable with the conversation yet.
I would agree with that. In the community that I'm in, I've had so many conversations with white parents who feel that, you know, they can just raise an inclusive child by not talking about any of these issues. That we can, as both of you were saying before about colorblindness, that we can, you know, we're actually going to be more inclusive if we just don't talk about it at all, because then we're just seeing each other as human. And then, and the research part of this is so important for, especially I think, white parents to know about, so that they can feel more, they can take the risk. And it does feel like a risk in the beginning because you don't know how to begin. And again, starting with picture books is great, I think, for young kids and parents to get comfortable in it.
And we're going to have to leave it there. We also put up a link on our Facebook page, Madeline, to one of your articles. We're going to continue our conversation in a moment. Madeline Rogan, thank you very much. And Aaron Winkler, thank you. This is Talk of Iowa.
Thanks.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how children learn about race. And of course, one of the places they learn about race is from the books they read or have read to them. Children's books are overwhelmingly about white characters and written primarily by white authors. My next guest, Vonda Michaud Nelson, has a lot of experience with children's books. She is the Youth Services Librarian at Rio Rancho Public Library in New Mexico and the author of Bad News for Outlaws, winner of the 2010 Coretta Scott King Author Book Award, one of the rare books for kids with an African-American protagonist written by an African-American author. Vonda, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You serve a diverse community at your library in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. What do you do to try to make sure that the kids that you serve see themselves in the books that you choose?
Well, our community is certainly diverse, though it is predominantly white in my particular area. We have Hispanic and African-American and some Asians, and as well as some Native Americans come to our library. The main thing that we try to do here in the children's department is include books in our story programs that include all races, regardless of who is in the audience. Sometimes we might have an audience of all white children, but that doesn't mean that the books that we present to them are only going to feature white children. We try throughout the year to include books from all cultures. It gives it a normalcy, if you know what I mean, that this is life. The world is full of different kinds of people, and these people cease to become different. They just become part of this wonderful mix of people that we're exposed to every day.
Now, when I have read a lot of children's books over the last 8 years particularly, but I've always had an interest in them. And something that I've noticed in selecting books at my public library is that a lot of the books that include Hispanic American or Hispanic characters or African American characters tend to be books that are about race or about culture, rather than having those characters included in more of an incidental way where their race doesn't matter to the story. Is that something that you've observed?
Yes. I understand what you're saying, and I personally would like to see more books that just feature African-American children experiencing the human experience, not necessarily something dealing with culture, as you said, or history. I think there is more of a need for that. One of my books, it's a beginning reader, it's called Ready, Set, Raymond, and it's just about a little boy who does things fast, and he could be from any culture. I'd like to try to do more books like that myself, though I have a personal interest in history, and sometimes those are the kind of things that I like to explore and learn about myself, and they often result in a book.
And Ready, Set, Raymond, am I correct that it was illustrated by Derek Anderson?
Yes,
who is an Iowan illustrator. So we have we have a lovely connection there. That's part of my home library.
Yes, and I was so pleased with the way he handled the art. He did some wonderful things that I never would have thought of. And, you know, he portrayed Raymond as I imagined him.
You know, the pictures in that book bring up an interesting question. And I'm actually a minor children's author myself. I've only written one book, which is now out of print. But it occurs to me that when the book goes off to an illustrator, no matter who has written the book, there isn't necessarily a race attached to the character or characters in the book. There was nothing in my book that indicated that the girl in my story was Caucasian, but mm-hmm. the illustrations came back and she is Caucasian. So we talk about a need for more diversity among the people who write children's books, but it strikes me that we need a greater diversity also among illustrators.
With regard to Ready, Set, Raymond, my editor basically said, asked me, how do you envision Raymond? I said he could be any boy, and we talked about him being an African-American boy, and I said, well, that would be nice because we need more books like this that feature African-American characters. If editors and publishers and art directors perhaps approach the author about this question, how would you feel about our drawing these characters as Hispanic, as African American, as Asian? Because perhaps white authors would jump at that opportunity, would feel, oh yes, that would be great. So perhaps if that question were asked more, if it was discussed with the author, though most of the time authors don't have much input into how the book is illustrated, unless they're illustrators themselves or unless they are veteran authors who have more influence over that sort of thing. I guess it's all about people talking to each other about what is going to work best for this book. And that's often the issue, too, is what is going to work best for the storytelling for this particular book. But it is true that probably the majority of the books with children of color in them are about culture or the history, you know, of that culture. And that's not a bad thing either, because I'll tell you one of the things that's happening, at least that's happened for me, is because as a child, I didn't really get much Black history in school. I feel that as an adult, I'm playing catch up. I'm out there learning my own history that I didn't learn growing up. But for me, I write for readers, but I write for myself first. And much of that is my own journey, my own sort of curiosity about my own history.
Let's talk about what it was like when you were growing up, because you grew up in rural Pennsylvania in the 1950s and 60s. Mm-hmm. When you looked at popular culture, whether it was books that were being published in that day and age or what you saw on television, did you see yourself reflected?
Not very much. My parents did read to us a great deal. My mother read to us every night, but the books were books that were available to us at the time. Uncle Wiggily's stories, which were wonderful, they were all animal tales. And the Bobbsey twins and Nancy Drew and those books were around. There was one book I remember. It's called Bright April by Margaret DeAngelo. The main character was an African-American little girl who looked like me. She had long pigtails, and it was about her joining the Brownies. I remember feeling a special attraction for that particular book and character. I'm sure it was because here we had a book where the main character was a Black child. And when I was growing up, television and books often featured black characters, but they were usually secondary characters, often in subservient roles, like maids and cooks and, you know, elevator operators. And then in the Westerns that we watch, and we were really into Westerns, you know, if they weren't secondary characters, they were often bad guys. And when I discovered Das Reeves as an adult, I thought about how knowing about him as a child might have made a little bit of difference.
And Bass Reeves is the subject of your book, Bad News for Outlaws. He was one of the first black lawmen west of the Mississippi, right?
Yeah, he may have been the first black lawman west of the Mississippi. He wasn't the first black lawman, but regardless, he was someone who achieved something major. Learning about Bass, like, it expanded my sense of history. And if I'd known about him as a child, I maybe could have seen that not all lawmen, not all cowboys look like Matt Dillon or the Cartwrights. And we loved Matt Dillon and the Cartwrights and Wyatt Earp and Hopalong Cassidy and all of those heroes. And we pretended to be them. You know, we play acted, we played cowboys regularly and fought over who got to be Wyatt Earp today. And if Bass Reeves had been amongst those, the people that we fought over who to be like, I think it might have made a little bit of a difference to me, that maybe made me see that, you know, I could maybe be a main character in the world and not just playing the secondary roles. And I remember feeling a little embarrassed as a child with how blacks were often portrayed, particularly in the movies and on television. We watched the Tarzan movies, and we loved those. But I do remember when it showed the natives and the savages feeling embarrassed by that and embarrassed by some of the incidents that happened in The Little Rascals. And then remembering in school, you know, we were the only black family in our elementary school. And, you know, when they talk about slavery, everyone turning around and looking at you. If the accomplishments of blacks had been more emphasized in school and throughout my life, I think for myself and for all black children, and not just black children, children of all cultures, white children, I think we all would have a better sense and feeling that everyone can achieve and everyone is capable of, say, being that main character.
Have you had an experience at the library with a child when they've seen someone in a book that looks a lot like them? Have you seen a child react to that?
I do have memories of, you know, like an African-American family coming in and they're just looking for books. And my thinking of a particular book that might be of interest and handing it to one of the children and just seeing their face light up a little bit. I think that for some children, to see themselves, people that look like them, in positive roles, how could it not make a difference? If you never see someone from your culture as a character to admire, to connect with, a character who does great things, is seen by others as someone that they would want to befriend, I don't see how it can't affect your own sense of pride in who you are.
I want to make a leap into literature for older kids, young adult literature. There was a little bit of controversy about the book The Hunger Games when it was made into a movie, because some people who read the book hadn't noticed that one of the characters was black. And when you read the book, it's very clear that she is. And I'm talking about Rue, who was a beloved character from the first book in that trilogy. And when the author describes her through the eyes of the heroine. She talks about her beautiful brown skin and her dark brown eyes and her curly hair, and, you know, never states a race, but mm-hmm. clearly describes her as an African American teenager, young woman, in such a subtle way that, as I mentioned, a lot of people didn't actually seem to notice when they read the book. But that strikes me that if I were an African American teenager, that would be a powerful thing to have a protagonist like that, where race isn't even discussed.
Yes, I like the idea of it not being something that has to be stated, that it's just so what, you know, that's the way it should be. Not to say that culture isn't important, because we're all proud of our culture and often celebrate that and emphasize that difference. Seeing the sameness, that we're all similar as people, as human beings. And so to feel that it doesn't have to be, when someone's describing someone else, very often the first thing's, well, he was black, she was white, she was Hispanic. And sometimes that's needed and helpful, but I think there's something that's refreshing about perhaps not feeling the need to describe a person in those terms, just saying she had brown skin.
What are your hopes for the future?
Well, I hope that the numbers of quality titles being published keep growing. I mean, I know that there's been a plateau over the years of books about African Americans. And I'm not sure exactly why. I don't know if it's, you know, the numbers of people submitting manuscripts, the situation with publishing and marketing and what they're feeling that they can sell. A lot of it is probably has to do with budgets. I don't really know. But I would love to see the numbers of quality titles. We don't just want books out there about people of color if they're not good books, you know? I mean, there's that, too, that sometimes books are published, and yes, there are people of color in them, but we deserve quality books about all kinds of people. We just don't want to put books out there just because we want more books about, you know, about people of color. It would be great to see a new hot series with a black main character that flies off the shelves like Harry Potter did. And all cultures and all ages are reading it. I like to see kids of all races lined up at bookstores waiting for the clock to strike midnight when the next book hits the shelves that features this African-American main character. I think that would be really cool.
Vonda, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Vonda Michaud Nelson is a children's librarian and an author. Her most recent book for young readers is No Crystal Stair. Talk of Iowa is produced by Sarah Bowden, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical assistance today from Julie Englander. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.